Good morning, Arizona homeowners. Why don't you walk with me around the corner here and see what we got going in the backyard and the outdoor living hour here at Rosie on the House, your Saturday morning tradition for 29 years. And don't you just love the smell of white creosote?
I just wish I had more of it. Some places are getting it, I guess.
You know, it's
not in my house.
It's funny how the monsoons do that.
Yep.
From our home in Whitman, it seems like for weeks, we'll watch the rain just follow the Hacienda River to the west of us. Just here comes the rain clouds right over the river, goes by. We're just like, please just come. Well, I didn't get it. I wasn't home, but apparently, I mean, the basketball hoop was blown over. The trash can was 200 yards away. It was a heck of a microburst that went through home yesterday. And there was water ponded. And even underneath, the trucks were wet. So, you know, I mean, that's when I tell that was a good rain. When there was enough water that it was running that it went all the way under the vehicle.
And yeah.
But I got home and it was blue sky.
Yeah. And sticky and muggy and nasty.
Oh, I was feeding the horse and I felt like I'm in Louisiana.
Yeah. Well, some areas of the state have gotten lots of rain. There are reports of a 3.5-inch rain at Christopher Creek last weekend. And
3.5.
3.5.
The state average per year is 7.14.
Well, that's here in Phoenix is 7-ish. I don't know what the state average is. But Christopher Creek, that little pocket there
gets a little more.
Probably 15 or 20 inches. Probably with snow and everything else, but of moisture. But yeah, that's still a lot of rain in a couple hours. So good rain, and hopefully we're getting it everywhere else we need it, you know, on the rim and in the White Mountains and places where potential of fire is hopefully lessened because it's getting wet. So let's
hope. It all runs downhill, fill up the reservoirs.
Yeah, that doesn't hurt either. That doesn't hurt either. You were talking about all the extra fish they're stocking because our lakes and streams are in pretty good shape. Well, let's just keep that going. We all want to catch more fish, so let's have more water.
I'd like to catch a fish right now.
A fish?
A fish. I don't know. I grew up thinking I was a great fisherman, but you don't need any skill in Louisiana. Put a worm on the hook. You don't even need to do that. Just put a hook in the water, and something's going to bite it.
A shiny thing, they'll hit it, huh?
Man, I try and fish in Arizona. I'm like, I'm awful at this. If you have a question about your landscape, garden, or lawn, it's 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you to get in touch with Mr. John J. Harper. You can text questions in to 411-923 or send an email if you have a picture or plant identification you need some help with. It's info@rosieonthehouse.com. And while I'm on the email, we received one early this morning. Someone wanted to know why their perennial ryegrass died. I'm guessing the first summer they've been in there, at least in the desert floor.
Well, it died because it's supposed to here in the summer. The term perennial is a bit misleading, you know, and in a lot of plants that are perennials someplace are not going to be a perennial here, and vice versa. We have things that are perennials here, like lantana, for instance. You know, people plant lantana in the Midwest and back east. It's an annual there. It freezes and dies. Perennial ryegrass is going to be an annual here because it's not going to withstand the heat. It's a perennial in the northern tier of states because it withstands the winter and it survives through the cold and the snow and it comes back. So the heat is a different story. We plant it as a cool season lawn or a winter lawn because our Bermuda grasses, which are our summer lawns, go dormant. They don't die. They just go dormant. So if you want a lush green lawn in the winter months when you're actually able to go outside and enjoy your lawn, you probably want a ryegrass. Perennial ryegrass is a much finer bladed, much more of a turf golf course quality grass than quote unquote annual ryegrass, which is really basically a pasture grass. Very thick, heavy bladed, wet, hard to mow, grows real tall and grows fast. So perennial ryegrass has become the predominant winter lawn that we plant here because of its turf type quality, not because it's a an annual or a perennial. It's still going to die. In fact, it really lives too long into the heat in most cases, causing some problems with the Bermuda grass not being allowed to transition early enough. And by the time the ryegrass does die, the Bermuda grass has stayed dormant or dominated too long, and it's dead clear back to the roots and has to come all the way back from the root system, causing all kinds of fits and people complaining about dead spots in their lawn. And, you know, it's just it's a tough deal. So my theory on that is, though, again, when are you able to go outside and enjoy your yard? When the weather is cooler. What is the lawn you have when the weather is cooler? It's the ryegrass. If you want to flip it around, folks that have hard winters in the cold northeast upper tier of states, don't worry about what their lawn looks like in January, February, December. It's probably covered with snow anyway. They're not going outside. They're not playing on the lawn. They're not playing croquet and volleyball or whatever you do on your lawn. And we're not doing that in the summertime here either. So you got a brown patch in your lawn, or you got a, you know, sprinklers aren't quite cutting it when it's 120 degrees. Maybe you got a fairly new landscape, or you got something like Japanese privet, or even citrus. Citrus just took a beating when it got that hot. There's a lot of sunburn, especially grapefruit, out there, and it is what it is. They're going to recover. They'll be fine. Don't prune them. Don't touch them. Don't do anything to them. As soon as we start getting some monsoon moisture, you'll probably start noticing a flush of new growth. All those old sunburned leaves will start falling off. Make sure you fertilize your citrus here pretty quick, middle or end of August. Yeah, good time to feed them, especially this year, to get help that recovery. But I think our expectations of the fact that our landscape should look great year-round here are out of whack. I think it's expecting way too much for plants to, you know, other than if you want it to look that way, then drive around. This is a great time to do this. Drive around now and see what looks great. And there are a number of plants that do look really good in spite of the heat, and that's what you need to have in your landscape. Mexican bird of paradise, Texas sage, dwarf oleander, lantana, bougainvillea. They all look wonderful. So, you know, have that be the main focus and the foundation of your landscape, and use the things that get a little beat up as winter color, as accents, and when they die, they die. You replace them again next year. Just like they do in the Midwest or back east, they plant hibiscus and canna lilies and bananas and all these tropical or subtropical plants, knowing full well they're going to die at the first freeze, and they're going to replant them again next year. We need to have the same mentality here.
We get pretty spoiled by that sunshine.
I'm stepping off of my soapbox now.
We get pretty spoiled by that sunshine. Let's get to our first call at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. Ron, you're on the line with Mr. John J. Harper of Harper's Nursery here at Rosie on the House. How can we help you this morning?
Good morning. Love listening to your show. Very informative. I have a question about a pineapple palm that's 15 years old. And my landscaper, as needed, cuts the fronds. And what's left is what looks like wood. But between the bases of the fronds, I see spaces, empty spaces. And I'm wondering, is that a sign that I'm going to have problems with the plant as it even gets taller? And is that going to be a home for insects like wasps or bees?
You know, it sounds to me like he's not cutting that frond close enough to the, if you want to call it that, the trunk of the tree. And he's leaving too much of a stem there. And that's what causes that space or those cavities.
Yeah.
Okay. So he can go back in with a sharp saw, with a chainsaw even, and tighten those up, get those cut closer to the trunk. You just want to make sure you don't cut it up too high and get into the green stems. But anything that's old and dry, you just have them go back and shave those down a little bit.
And okay, and then what about the spaces that are there?
They won't be there anymore.
Okay. I'll have to tell them then.
You know, they literally, you'll just have a basically a smooth surface. at that point if you cut them off close enough to the origination point where that leaflet or stem comes off of the trunk.
We appreciate the call, Ron. Have a great Arizona Saturday morning. For palms, there's a lot of varieties, and my favorite palm is a no palm. I've never been a palm fan. I don't know why. But there's some that just, you know, queen palms seem to be very problematic. There's a lot of people have different theories on how to best treat for palms. I mean, there's almost a, you've got the arboriculture world, you've got the, for trees, it's almost like palms would be their completely own industry in some cases.
Well, well, palms come from different parts of the world, and there are palms. The one the gentleman just mentioned, the Phoenix palms, are the palms we see in the Middle East, Egypt, and you know the date palms family. It's very heat tolerant. You know they do very well here because they just love the heat. But even within that family, there's the Phoenix Robellini, the little pygmy palm, is much more sensitive. It doesn't like the cold, and it's not real crazy about the heat. It needs lots of water, and it's probably best where it gets a little afternoon shade or protection, but it'll take full sun if it gets plenty of water. Queen palms are very tropical. You know, they're in the coconut kind of family of palms. Well, where do we think about those? Those are coming from some tropical island somewhere. So the weather is completely different. They don't like it here. Just a simple matter of fact. The most prominent palm we have here, the Washingtonia robusta, the Mexican fan palm, or the Folifera, the California fan palm, there's actually a native stand of Foliferas in the Kofa Mountains. So they're again more of a desert palm. They do obviously very well here with limited amounts of water and lots of intense sunshine. So some palms just need to be taken into consideration what you're planting.